You're listening to Strong Runner Chick Radio, where our goal is to educate, empower, and connect female distance runners. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any platform of your choosing, or share it with someone who might find this episode helpful. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show. Special shout out to today's sponsor and the sponsor of this entire Health as a Foundation to Sports series, Athlete Blood Test. They provide individualized, athlete-specific blood analysis to discover your unique nutrition, training, and recovery needs. Join the thousands of enthusiasts, elites, and pros that have already used Athlete Blood Test to help reach their goals. Testing is easy. Simply go to athletebloodtest.com, choose your panel, and schedule an appointment at a conveniently located lab core. Whether you're running your first marathon or competing to win, we're cheering for you, and we can help you get there. Use code SRC15 for 15% off your first panel. Hello, Strong Runner Chicks. Welcome back to another episode of SRC Radio. Today, I have on Katie Spotts joining me for the show today, who has done quite a number of things. Most recently, she'll tell you here in a moment. I don't want to give it all away, but she did a pretty big ultra endurance feat. She is an ultra endurance athlete. She's a speaker and author, and is part of Skate for Water and really helping others get access to clean water through her endeavors. So Katie, welcome to the show. I'll let you tell everybody a little bit about what you've been up to these days.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. So most recently, there was an event that last summer, it was called Run for Water. And so it was my attempt to run 11 ultras in 11 days. So 31 miles every day, to raise funds for 11 clean water projects in Uganda. So that was part of a Guinness World Record. And really over the past decade, it's been finding ways to raise funds, awareness about the water crisis through endurance as the platform. So there's been a row for water, swim for water, ride for water, many runs for water. And from doing all these challenges, 40,000 people have gained access to clean water. So it's just really cool to live out, you know, what I'm really passionate about, but then also really, you know, help out a cause that is more than deserving than of the support. Yeah, so
absolutely. That's incredible, I have to say. I just came across your Skate for Water endeavor and fundraiser, and it's really cool to read about you can have, like, folks could sponsor a mile where they sponsored a mile of the journey with a donation. So I love the concept of this. How did you get involved initially, both in ultra endurance or in running, and in deciding to fundraise? I know a lot of runners out there, including myself, are always like asking the question of how can I give back, you know, through running. And so I'm curious, like, how you initially got into donating and fundraising.
Yeah. So my journey to endurance came by avoiding it. So I, growing up, you know, played basketball, baseball, soccer, every sport, every team sport that had a ball and a field or a court, I tried. The longest sport, quote unquote sport, that I lasted in was Irish dancing, and it was because I wanted the shoes. So I wasn't really tuned in. I was kind of physically I was there, mentally I wasn't. So in my senior year of high school, I needed to take one more gym class to get my diploma, and I was looking at all the options, and running, walking was there, and I was like, oh, all I have to do is walk. I'm just going to put in the least amount of effort and get my A and get on with life. So I mean, I was trying to petition out of this class. I did not want to take this gym class, and I put in the bare minimum, and then a few weeks in, I was just so bored. I was just walking. And so I set a target. Hey, maybe I could run 1 mile. I mean, to me, it sounded impossible. And I would have never done that willingly. And so I did. I set this target, and with no pressure from coaches or pressure to let down teammates, there was nothing to lose. So I really started my journey with that 1 mile. And no, it wasn't like this Nike moment, but it was an awakening, because we say things we can do and oftentimes and can't do, and oftentimes we're wrong about that. And so I always thought, no way, I couldn't run a mile, and put to the test I could. And so it started with that 1 mile, and then the curiosity just kept growing. And so it was maybe 6 months later that I did my first marathon. And then 12 months later was cycling across America, 3,300 miles. And it's like, once it was open, it was like the sky's the limit. So that led to swimming a 325 mile river, for swimming the entire length of the Allegheny River, and then rowing across the Atlantic, from Africa to South America. And just, yeah, adventure after adventure. And
Wow, yeah.
so water came into the picture. I was studying for college in Australia, and every major headline was about their water shortages, this extreme drought that they had been going through for a decade. And it was this perpetual fear of it running out. And I was like, wow, this is very developed. Like, I can't believe that the most basic human need is something that, when we have planes and cell phones and all this wealth and technology, it kind of blew my mind. And then I was in class, and one of my professors mentioned that the wars of the future would be on water, and in some countries, it's already the case. And that's when I just kept digging and finding out more, and it was just shocking on such a like ground zero basic level. And when you just see how much we're capable of, and to know that at the time it was 1 billion and 1 in 6 people, it was hard not to want to do something. And I definitely started with anger, just like, how is that? Like, people are drinking water that we wouldn't dare give our pets, and this is like normal. Like, I don't know. It just blew my mind, and it's still. And now I have a lot of hope, because like Sawyer is one of the partners that I worked with and support what they do. And they have water filters that, I mean, you could provide access for as little as $3 to $5 for one person for a decade. And so
Wow.
there's a lot of problems. We got problems, more problems every day, problems. But what gives me hope with water is there are proven solutions, and there are ways, and we don't need to put tons of money into research. It's just funding the solutions that are already in existence. And so it's hard not to want to. And I mean, I think out of all the years that I've been doing this, I've never had someone say like, oh no, I don't think people should have clean water. I mean, it's just,
Right.
we can all agree on that. And yeah, and even now, I mean, the biggest pushback is like, why aren't you helping people here? And I'm like, well, why aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
So they do help within the United States now too.
Oh,
So like, especially in the Navajo Nation, where there isn't
yeah.
access, they are starting to work there. And so even here in the United States, there are water projects being funded. And yeah, so
Yeah.
that's kind of how it all
That's really
began.
cool.
But I mean, I think what's great now is it's so normal. Like, it's when I first started doing this, I was like, how is that going to raise money? Like, what do they get out of it? Like, and so I know at first I didn't understand the concept of using endurance, using adventure, using these types of things to raise money for clean water. But I've just been blown away by schools and Rotary clubs, and people who are inspired by the cause and maybe haven't even heard about the good work that's being done. And so it just seems like a no-brainer to do that, to combine it and give it a purpose bigger, a purpose bigger than, you know,
that's
yourself.
Really, really amazing. Yeah. For someone that's listening, I'm curious, like, I mean, you've explained kind of how you got started, but there's just so much there to dive into. I mean, for someone that's listening, that's maybe never done something like this, right? Now you've done so many of these initiatives and given back, but maybe someone that feels overwhelmed, you know, what would you recommend, whether it's like picking a cause you're passionate about, and then where do you go from there? Like, how do you kind of, are there a few steps you would give someone that just wants to know, hey, what, you know, how might I give back in something like clean water or, you know, kind of picking a cause and then where to get started with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you aspire to do something, chances are someone else has done it. And so I am a huge advocate for finding someone who can kind of be a mentor or a guide and just, you know, trying to find out as much information from others who have done it, because that will help break down what is a priority, what is important, what are the steps. And I've done enough challenges to know that there is, you know, there's always the curveballs, there's always, you know, the changes and plans, and that's definitely part of it. And I think part of the excitement of setting out and doing these things, but I think a lot of it has to do with every individual has a call, has a purpose, and no one else can give that to you. No one else could find that out for you. And so part of the process of, you know, finding that thing is finding out what doesn't work. And so I'm always an encourager of just, you know, trying things, and sooner or later you will stumble across, you know, the thing that really lights you up if you continue to try. So, yeah, I mean, reflecting on it, journaling, thinking through, I think, one of the biggest things that I've kind of realized through this is if you have a strong enough why, you can figure out how, like how to do things or what is not as important, what to do is not as important as what your why is. And so I think knowing your why, knowing your purpose is really important because, you know, things get hard and it grounds you and keeps you focused so that, you know, your vision is clear rather than clouded by setbacks or distractions or whatever it is on the way to achieving something.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how do you choose the adventures you're going to embark on? Like what goes into, you know, deciding to do these adventures that may not be said, you know, a lot of us sign up for races, right? Or something that's already organized, but how do you go about deciding what type of adventure you'd like to go on?
Well, like rowing across the Atlantic, that one, like that, for example, it was something I tried really hard to ignore. I found out about it. I was sitting on a bus and just doing small talk, and someone mentioned their friend did it. And I was like, that can't be real. This guy's making this up. And so I read about it and I kept reading about it. And then it would be, you know, at night, just Googling and then it turned into imagining what it would be like. And so it's almost like it starts with curiosity, like the need to know, and just so curious. And then for the row, it was something that I try to talk myself out of. So sometimes it's the thing that I'm most resistant to, because that's where you can kind of grow the most
yeah.
if you're the most resistant. So I think one of the like barometers for making decisions and and accepting these types of challenges is here's my theory, that you can't outrun fear, because you're either going to, you know, fear failure or fear that, or on the other side, it's the fear of regret. So you're either, you know, there's both options available. And I think for the row and for a lot of these challenges, I believe that the fear of regretting not doing it is a heavier burden. And I would rather have the struggle of doing hard things and the reward of doing hard things than the struggle of regret, the struggle of what ifs and if onlys, and that lingering feeling of, you know, not doing something that maybe you were supposed to do. So, yeah, I know that's like not very like tangible of, but I don't know what's really, you know, to come, and it does kind of find me more than look for it. But yeah,
very neat. Yeah, I just a side note. Yeah, and fear. I was listening to a podcast, like Brené Brown and Martha Beck, I think, was on yesterday, and they were talking about fear and how if you have more of a sense of longing for something, like just that kind of emotion, like longing to do this thing, even if you're afraid, you can kind of lean into it. But if like there's no longing there, and there never was, then maybe, you know, the fear is kind of resistance because you don't actually want to do the thing. I don't know. It was really interesting to think about. So kind of made me think about, yeah, what are we like longing to do in life, even if it's scary?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of these things, I was reading an article. So you're also featured in Runner's World, among a lot of other, you know, publications, which is amazing. You hand cycled across the country in the 3,000-mile race across America after breaking your pelvis the week before the race. I'm like, how did you go about doing that? I wanted to ask you if you've, you know, had any challenges or struggles or like big obstacles along the way. And I imagine that must have been a hard, you know, choice to continue to do that. And so I was just kind of wondering if you want to speak to that or any other challenges you've encountered.
Yeah. So I am from Ohio originally, and I kind of put it all in the pot of like going after this. So it was with a friend who's also an ocean rower, and we were attempting to break the 2-person world record. So Race Across America is like, basically the only rule is like, don't stop, just keep riding your bike until you get to the other side. And our goal was to make it across in 7 days. So I moved out to California, was training like 30 hours a week, and was out there for 8 months before the race. And it was my last big training ride that I was doing 7 days before the race. So it was like a 70-mile ride, and a ride that was very routine. Like I knew where I was going, what I was doing. And being in the Bay, there is a little bit of like moisture, and because of the fog and everything. So I was just going down the Santa Cruz Mountains, and it was on the first turn, and immediately I'm down, and I get up and I'm like, wow, I have no road rash. My bike is perfectly fine. And then I try walking, and I was like, that's not normal. And so I go home, and I'm on like WebMD, and I'm like, oh, it's just a pulled muscle. I'll just ice it and elevate. So I was icing and elevating, and I was just thinking, it's a Friday afternoon. If I don't go to the doctor, I'm going to have to go to the emergency room. So I went to the doctor, and they're like, you know, doing all these stretches and asking me if I'm in pain. And I'm like, yeah, everything's in pain. Every stretch you're asking me to do is painful. And so then they're like, okay, we're going to do x-rays. And my eyes are just like huge, because I've never broken anything. And just the thought of that being that serious, I was just like, what? No, it can't be that. It can't be that serious. So they tell me I fractured my pelvis in a few spots, and I was in such disbelief that I had them printed out. And then, they said like most people my age who break their pelvis doing it from falling out of buildings or like car accidents. So I went home, and because I've done marathons and different events, you always see some kind of adaptive, you know, cyclists. And so I've already knew conceptually that there's adaptive ways to be on those types of hand bikes. And so I go home and I put together a spreadsheet of like, I don't know, 50 or 100 different bike shops and all the cycling clubs in California. And I'm just emailing like, does anyone have a hand bike? And 24 hours later is when I was able to, by the kindness of someone, he let me borrow their hand bike that had been like 20 years old, had been around the world, and definitely wasn't, you know, the latest and greatest, but it worked. And so, yeah, about a day or two later, I was learning how to use it. And so it did change from being a 2-person team to a 4-person team. And we had to be really strategic about, like, I was doing all the flats. And if there was any incline, I would be going like 4 miles per hour. So it would not be worth it at that point. And so it was going downhill, I would go super fast too quickly. So yeah, I mean, of course that's not recommended. I am definitely aware of that. I know that there's huge risks in doing that. I tried to do it within the limitations that my body had, but also, I mean, it's just kind of like same story, different day or different circumstance. And it's not about what you can't do. It's always about what you can do. And yeah, maybe I couldn't ride a bike, but I could ride a hand bike. Maybe I couldn't go 20 miles per hour, but I could do 10. And so it definitely shifted from a record to a just finish and really celebrating that. And there is a lot to say about, you know, challenges that you are like self-inflicted, and I definitely could have quit. And I, you know, I made that choice that I would rather do it that way than not do it at all. And so I was really grateful. I was really thankful that my friends that were on crew decided to help. And so really thankful that they were able to help with those miles. And it was sponsored by Levi's, and so they had a film team, and I was really, you know, we had the talk beforehand because I didn't want it to negatively affect, you know, their brand, and just kind of looking at all those factors. And they were really supportive, and you know, whatever you want to do, if you don't want to do it, we're behind you. If you do want to do it, you know, we'll be supportive. And so that was really great too. So it was a bad situation, but out of all the ways it could have went, we made it across, and yeah, we raised the amount of money that we had intended on raising. And so it was quite the ride. That's for sure.
I imagine. Yeah, that's awesome. That was another question kind of along the lines of your crew playing such a role, and of course all the brands that have taken part. What role has community played for you throughout this whole process?
The last event, I would say, had the biggest kind of community involvement. So the 11 ultras in 11 days were done across the state of Ohio. And that was along the Ohio to Erie Trail. So it was great because, you know, we knew where to go, and it was very well marked. And so during that run, the charity was helping to be able to invite the community and invite people to come out. So in Columbus and Cincinnati, Columbus and Cleveland, there were people running. And I think it's just really cool to be able to share that with others. And the last day of the trip or the run was in Cleveland. And I was joking around that, like, oh, wow, now I know what it's like to be the female version of Forrest Gump, because there was several dozens of runners. And it was just, yeah, they really stepped up and made me feel supported. And so I really do appreciate that. And then just people who cheer along on social media. And yeah, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I love that. That's great to hear that you have so much community support as well. I think that's really important as you go along. And I'm kind of curious. So you said you are doing van life, right? And so I'm curious, like, how long you've been doing van life. Of course, I think a lot of people are just interested in how that looks and maybe when you decided to do that. And I don't know, did that mean stepping away from, maybe a traditional job or like lifestyle, or what that's looked like for you, both in terms of training and just life in general?
So I am active duty in the Coast Guard, and I know of other people who have lived on sailboats or camper vans. And so because we move so much, I think I've moved it averages like once a year for the last, few years. And so I did do van life before. So I had an idea of what I was getting myself into. But I've been in it for about a year now. And there's extra little hoops sometimes, but I love it. I've always been a minimalist. I've always valued experiences over things. And I was resistant to share when I first bought it, and when I first started living out of it, I was very resistant to share it, because I actually don't want to use it just to, just like relax and just, I'm very mission and purpose driven. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see it as a way of accomplishing more rather than doing less. And so I think cutting out certain things, like I don't spend a lot of time cleaning, and I think it's efficient for the lifestyle I have. And because I'm in the Coast Guard, it means that, we have like gym access. And so, I do intend on doing some adventures with it, and using it as a home base for other, running and cycling events in the future. But, the only thing that's really changed with my training is, I have for the last few months switched from more weights and less cardio. And that's mainly because every time I do cardio, I always have to take a shower, and with weights, you don't have to shower as much. So
good thinking.
I do have a gym membership, so I can shower every day. It's just, I think time and just the ease of it. I mean, it's not only showering, but it's laundry. And so I have been doing more weights, and that's kind of the biggest change in my fitness routine. But I feel like I do a lot more, and I don't know, I do more of the things I want to do and less of the things that I don't, so it works for me.
That's awesome to hear. Are there any, I guess, where are you based currently, and any destinations you're hoping to check out, or even like future adventure kind of, I'm calling them adventures, but of course you're doing a lot of work in the process as well. So anything that's on your radar?
So I am based in Maine. This is my last year in the Coast Guard, and I do think I will retire after this tour. And so when I decided to do the Atlantic Row, it was always intended as an around the world journey and by human power. So that means running, cycling, rowing, and maybe some rollerblading. And so I looked at that journey and I was like, okay, well, what's the part you're most likely to fail? What's the most expensive part? Because you don't want to do that at the end and have that, you know, anticipation and that worry. I mean, yeah. So I decided to do the row very intentionally, with that adventure in mind. And so for my 20s, I was more focused on, work stuff. And now I think I would like to go back to that. So last year I cycled across Maine and it was really to test out all the touring gear for an around the world type journey. And, so I'm looking to cycle from South to North America, around 10,000 miles, from where I landed in the row and then back here to the States. And then the vision would be, I think it's very achievable to help 100,000 people get clean water. And so right now it's 40,000 that have gained it. And I would love to, you know, help different countries along the way. So there's tons of water nonprofits that work in the countries that I'll be cycling through. So, continuing to do these events and adventures with the goal and the vision of helping 100,000 get clean water. So, helping people on the route and along the way. And, I think it'd be cool to have, you know, school visits and get schools involved and engaged and kind of bring them on the adventure. So that's the idea. And Brazil just opened their borders, which is good news.
Oh yeah.
That was the only country that I was like, you can get in, you just couldn't get in by land. And so I've been watching things like that. And I mean, there's a lot of things that could change, but as it stands now, it is feasible to do that journey with all the COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
So
very cool. That's amazing. Are there any, like, looking over your whole journey? I also noticed you've been on Joe Rogan's podcast. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have a TED talk. I'm like, wow, I am talking to someone that has been on a lot of different, you know, all over the place. This is so cool. So I encourage anyone listening to go check out Katie all over the place. Your link in your Instagram bio has it all, I think. So, but I was going to ask you, are there any highlights, maybe personally, or, you know, of course, like, I think there's probably a highlight of like giving back as much as you have, but anything that's been just like maybe a surprise or a highlight along the way for you?
I guess the biggest curveball for me was really like when I first started doing adventures, it was like my idol. I worshiped it. And that was my worth. That was my identity. And it left me in a very low spot, like, especially after doing some of like the different kind of world records where you would expect someone to feel a certain way. And I didn't. And so adventures are great. And I mean, God is greater. And that's kind of where this journey has led me to see that, that my identity isn't that. And it was definitely an awakening to kind of almost like a mirage, like you expect it to be a certain way. So I guess I would just hopefully encourage others to explore faith and see what that's about, because I don't think I would have been able to do the last adventure, because it's hard to enjoy something if your worth depends on it. And so I think there's a lot more joy that comes from kind of putting that second. And that's the only way I've been able to come back to it, because I definitely hit this low after hitting the high and had to figure a lot out. So
yeah, absolutely. Very cool. That's a good lesson, I think, to keep in mind. And yeah, like, we're always striving for something more, and it's, you know, I think just recognizing where you are and being happy with that is also an important lesson learned along the way to any kind of journey or adventure. Well, I have a couple more questions. So one is also, I'm sure listeners are wondering, like, how can we follow along and support your journeys? Like, how can listeners get involved in maybe the Clean Water Initiative or giving back to the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so I actually just launched Adventure Grants, and it's intended to, so it's up to $500, and it is for anyone that wants to do their own ride for water, swim for water, whatever, run for water, and in faith that you would help support the cause and spread the word. So it would be up to $500 to offset your own expenses, because I mean, of course, there's always your own expenses to do these types of adventures. So it would be something to support individuals who aspire to give back and do something for water. So that is all on like my social media, and I have a website, just katiespots.com. So those are due March 1st and announced March 22nd for World Water Day. And then there also is an adventure starting next weekend. My friend and I are skating an ultra marathon every day from Key Largo to Key West. So skating across 44 different islands, and we'll probably be more on water than land. So across all the Keys. And so skateforwater.com is where you can sponsor a mile for $40. And that all goes 100% to the charity to help a community in Haiti. So Katie Spots on Instagram, and Hello Katie Spots on Facebook too. So
very cool. Thank you so much for sharing. I can't wait to follow along. It sounds like you're on an ever evolving journey of just like continual, you know, new initiatives to become involved with, or continued work in these areas. So I appreciate you sharing. And any questions that, like, I guess with all your interviews, or maybe topics that you don't feel are often addressed or maybe overlooked when thinking about, you know, your work?
I guess the biggest thing is like, I think what's encouraging to hear perhaps is like the things that I'm involved with do take a lot of planning, like, and I think, you know, sometimes when you do these like bigger events, it seems like it's about strength, or about, I don't know, these things that are only for special people, but I think really it comes down to planning and how important of a tool that can be in doing things. And so there's that. And
Yeah. Lots of planning that goes into it, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. So you got to be a good planner, I guess. This isn't all spontaneous for those that want to know.
I like planning enough.
Yeah. Great. Last question that I have for you is, and this can be kind of, I mean, you're also into rowing. So like, what does being a strong runner chick mean to you, and, or maybe a strong woman in any regard?
I think it has a lot to do with respect and celebrating your body for what it does for you every single day. Mm-hmm. Just really being grateful for the strength that we do have, and without comparison. So Yeah.
That's a great one. I think a lesson that's hard to learn or tough to practice. So yeah. Thank you so much, Katie, for joining me for the show today. It was a joy to chat with you and get to learn more about your story. And I encourage listeners to follow along and get involved as you know, much as you can. So really appreciate your time, and hope you all listeners have a wonderful rest of your day. Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for listening to the Strong Runner Chicks Radio. Do us a favor and leave a review in iTunes to help spread awareness and foster the SRC community. Additionally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Strong Run Chicks.